Speaking of Banana Day, as you know, this is the measure of an episode where it is our continuing mission to explore what makes Star Trek genuine Star Trek and not just, I had one and I can't remember. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jonathan. I mean, the obvious one is Deep Space Nine. And we do this using three criteria. The first one is there sci-fi in the plot? Not just a shell, not just a skin, but it needs to be there for the plot to make sense. Number two, is that sci-fi presented in a unique or novel fashion? And number three, is there a ethical, moral, or mythical dilemma? I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Paul. And this week we watched Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War.
Wait, were we wrong about this being a musical episode?
I know. I was like, what? We got for the first 10 minutes and I was like, the first number is going to be a big surprise for everybody.
I mean, it still could have happened. Like, there could have been just kind of setting this stuff up and, like, the music, kind of like what happened in Once More with Feeling, where the music actually did reveal how people were feeling to each other. Obviously, that is not how this went down. But,
well, also would have been unnecessary because, well, we can get into it. Yeah. But this episode, there was no subtext to me.
So, I'm just going to dive right in. I don't know how comfortable I feel speaking about this episode because I've read comments from war vets who felt that this episode nailed it, and I can't speak to that. I mean, I felt like this episode was very heavy-handed, and I do have suggestions on how it should have been paced. But as far as like people talking about Chapel's response to things and or Tagus's response to things, like they said they nailed it. So I have a hard time feeling comfortable speaking about their presentations.
I think that in terms of its authenticity and its care to reproduce something that happens in real life very well, I think it gets an A+.
Sure.
In terms of it being a dramatic television show, I don't think it was very well written.
Right.
It's hard to balance those things. When you have these huge movies and series and television shows that are made to be about this issue, mm-hmm. it's hard to do this and have it not feel on the nose and have it not feel somewhat trite.
Right. Right. It's kind of like when you introduce a new character and you want everybody to know about how great this new character is. You know, when they're around, everybody's talking about how great they are. And when they're not around, everybody's talking about how great they are. You know, like every scene was about the Butcher of Jigal. And, you know, they were either talking about how great it is that we have this Klingon representing the Federation, or they were talking about how horrible it was that they had this coward, essentially, who was killing everyone, you know, go against his own principles to be here. So how can he be trusted?
I feel like there wasn't any, I don't want to say twist, because I think that would betray the meaning of the episode.
Right.
But some kind of narrative point of interest. For example, what if Joseph, who I feel like I just learned his first name, the doctor, mm-hmm. I feel like, wouldn't it have been interesting? He wasn't overtly triggered or explicitly triggered. Mm-hmm. And we find out later that he was in fact the Butcher. Because I feel like him being the Butcher was very slowly revealed and not a big surprise.
Right.
At least I kind of guessed it was going to be him before they did the big reveal. So you could have easily written it where you weren't hinting at that, and it just became an interesting point of view that wasn't pro or against this particular issue, but was at least interesting. I was actually expecting the Klingon ambassador to in some way be very enlightened, mm-hmm. having come out of the Battle of Jigal, truly changed, and him having to convince these people who were a victim of his past, mm-hmm. change them truly. And maybe one of them doesn't want to change. And that's the betrayal. That's the tragedy, because he was actually changed and not making him a coward. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough for one of them, and they still kill him anyway.
Right.
Right? Like, that would have been more interesting, I feel like, mm-hmm. and something we haven't really seen more of.
Well, yeah, and the other element, too, that I feel would have made this a little better is if the dinner was the climax and not, you know, the big reveal about Joseph being the butcher.
And what if one of those people was the most recalcitrant and stubborn about their view on this person, that nobody can change, nobody that bad can change, mm-hmm. nobody that evil can change. And then the ambassador actually changes their mind.
Right.
You know, that would have been an interesting character moment for
them. Another thing, too, about the ambassador is he didn't change his demeanor through the whole thing. And it would have been really great if, either direction, he did blow up and get really mad about something that happened, you know, and like have him relive that moment as well and have them understand like why he did defect.
Right.
Or, you know, the other way around, like have him learn that Joseph was the butcher and kind of, you know, not get defensive, but like just completely melt down. Klingons don't cry, so he wouldn't cry, but something to illustrate just his absolute remorse about taking this guy's atrocities and putting them on himself.
The idea that there could have been a shared redemption theme between the Klingon ambassador and Joseph, that there could have been this moment where they both relate to each other in spite of their polar differences, that would have been more interesting to me. And then he does kill him, right? Or somebody else kills him or something like that. Like he still dies. I think he has to die at the end of this.
Yeah.
That's the tragedy. But it feels like, it felt empty to me. It felt like it was leading to something where, not that every plot line has to have some sort of twist.
Right, no.
But it felt as though they had an opportunity to really drive home a theme. And there wasn't really a theme at this except trauma, I guess, right. is the theme. But to me, the end of this was not facing your trauma. Like none of them really wanted to have anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a couple of superficial Star Trek things that I do want to talk about.
Sounds good.
Right? Might as well leave all this boring shit behind.
I'm very curious to hear like what you choose to put, leave, and take out of this episode.
There's a point where Spock and, I guess, the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, is the bartender Starfleet? Or are they just kind of have a day job like on a cruise ship where they're a bartender on
I'm
Starship?
Almost positive that it's a day job.
Gotta be, right?
I can't imagine like going through Starfleet training. You know, what are you gunning for?
To tend bar.
Right. Engineering.
Yeah.
Piloting.
So.
Bartending.
Spock is making Ractogena,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And he says, we're experimenting on making not a delicacy, but a caffeinated beverage from Kronos.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, I have to be okay with this. Because if they said it was some futuristic space caffeine,
mm-hmm.
I would have been mad too, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems very unlikely that Kronos would have caffeine, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he could also say a caffeine equivalent.
Yeah, he could have said that. He could have made up a new word that didn't have caffeine behind it. Right.
Right. Yeah.
That was just, it's a stimulant.
Yes, stimulant. That would have been good.
Unless they're adding caffeine. Unless Ractogeno is some sort of mixture between a Kronos / Earth blendy. A blendy?
Yeah, it's classic, you know.
You know, when you take fruit and you put some milk and maybe some spinach and you blendy.
Right, you get a hybrid, yeah. And well, and this kind of goes back to the things that we've been frustrated with, you know, they also mentioned Romulan ale by Clint Howard, by the way, who we haven't mentioned. This is like his sixth appearance.
We've seen an original series, the original series one that he's in.
Yeah. Didn't we? Yeah. He's the,
where he's a kid. Yep,
he's the childlike alien. He's the one to the alien puppet.
Right. Strangely, he looks younger in this episode.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing. No, my point is like one of our frustrations is, you know, the alien adjective before the common noun. But the other part, too, is Ractogena was created, I think, for DS9 because they had a bar. Or it was briefly mentioned in TNG right before DS9. But Ractogena became the drink of choice on DS9. And since then, it has become like kind of the go-to coffee. And I'm kind of done with it. Like, it would just be nice if they...
Well, it makes they picked a really good name, right? It makes me want to have one.
Right.
I want to have a Ractogena, but I can't just go to Star Wars land or Star Trek land and have them serve me an oat milk latte and like, here's your Ractogena. Like, I want to know, what does a Ractogena taste like?
I personally think that a Ractogena should not taste like coffee. Like, it should have some kind of rich flavor, you know, and obviously it's caffeine, but like that's what would make it interesting, is if it if it's not just an espresso.
Well, here's the problem is that it comes from the land of Klingon.
Right.
Right. So it's very likely going to be some part mud.
Right, right.
They blend up mud
and blood
with water and blood, probably worms of some kind. So, but see, here's the thing. It feels very refined in DS9. And so I want to know what the hell is a Ractogino. Mm-hmm. It's served hot. We know that.
Right. Can you get an iced Ractogino? I wonder if anyone has ever ordered that. Or if like they just look at you like you have 10 heads. Like,
I don't know. Like, I guess that's like ordering a beer iced.
Well, or like ordering ice cream hot.
Right. That's called a milkshake. You ever had a warm milkshake before?
No.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to assume you're lying. That sounds so nasty.
What? Why? Why is it still like sweet? It's still, I'm trying to think. It's like, it's basically like liquid pie. Or,
dude, when you've made the sale, stop selling. Like, what? No.
I don't think it doesn't sound like I made any
no,
sale.
No, you haven't. I'm just saying, stop digging.
Well, have you ever had a warm smoothie?
No.
Well, then you can't say anything. I myself have had a warm smoothie by accident, and it was quite tasty.
You're like, never again, but I did enjoy that moment.
Yeah. Wait, you have like you have equivalent stuff that is warm, like for example, a lava cake.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a smoothie. That's kind of like a hot smoothie.
No.
In different form. I'm trying to think. This is very interesting because I always kind of thought that sweet can go both ways.
It can, but that doesn't mean the same thing can go both ways.
But like what is so offensive? We're not talking about like a spinach smoothie, right? We're talking about like an ice cream type of like a sundae type of thing, right?
Yeah.
So what's so offensive about that?
Because it's ice cream. Like ice cream is not served warm. It's melted. It's a disappointment at that point.
Well, I have to say, if you have ice cream too frozen, it's not fun then either. It's got to be like the perfect consistency, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't need a knife, right?
Right. Well, yeah. For the most part, yes.
Although it is very nice to have a warm, you warm your spoon up into the cold ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, on banana day, this is probably just heaven.
Right. I would agree with that.
So, okay. Well, we can talk about this later, but right. I have a feeling that you should try a hot ice cream.
I will do some research and see if there's anything around me that has a hot smoothie. And
you just microwave ice cream. It's very easy to make.
Right. Yeah. And if not, then I will try this diabetes in a cup and see what happens.
Well, wait a minute. You ever put like hot fudge on top of ice cream?
Yes.
Well, that's hot.
Yes, but it doesn't warm up the ice cream to the point where I'm now like drinking it.
I guess that's true. So you don't like spoon up the dregs when you're done with your ice cream.
I do, but it's still chilly. I don't let it sit for a couple hours and then I'm like, all right, got my ice cream slop.
You're making it seem like it's more like flat, lukewarm soda.
Yes, that is what I am picturing. Okay. Like that level of disappointment.
Okay.
You see?
Oh,
which brings what?
It brings to mind.
Yeah.
Brings to mind carbonated ice cream. Mm.
So, okay. I've talked about this before with my brothers, and they're like, yeah, that's called diet. I'm like, no, you're missing my point. I want soda-flavored soda water.
Okay.
You know, like the unique flavors of soda. Like, I want a Dr. Pepper soda water. Or like,
but not sweet?
Well, is that right. Like
the difference?
Yeah, that's kind of the point. Like, it's not, it just has that little bit of the aftertaste where I'm getting that flavor, but not being bombarded with it.
Well, supposedly, the main ingredient in soda is supposed to be cola. Like the cola nut.
Right.
I don't know how close we are to that at this stage in terms of what they make even Dr. Pepper or Coke out of. That's got to exist. There's got to be a cola flavored sparkling water, right?
Yeah, I have not seen it out here, so maybe it is a thing, but.
There's got to be something in Brazil where it's a weird flavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in South Africa, somewhere far away from the United States. So anyway, I want to know what a Ractogino tastes like.
I mean, it sounds like a great drink that you would order at a coffee shop or a bar.
Right. When I think Ractogino, I think like a delicious latte or something. So maybe I just want a latte and call it a day, right?
Just keep going to coffee shops and see if anyone ever serves it to you. You're like, can I get a Ractogino?
Oh, that would be an amazing, it's like a special code word for nerds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm doing that next time I go. There's a coffee shop I go to a lot. I'm going to ask for a Ractogino.
Yeah.
And see, and then when they look at me funny, I'm just going to be like, never mind, I'm going to have this.
Right. Or, you know, you will find somebody who you can share our podcast with.
I'll have business cards made.
Right.
Okay. So observation number two about this thing. The whatever parsley that Pike comes to get from Joseph, right? I'm fairly sure that the doc is supplying narcotics to Pike. The way that they talk, you know, he's like, have you got any more of that parsley?
Oh, it's 100% a C4. Yeah.
It's gotta be the way that they're talking about it.
Well, because he's like,
and everybody knows about it.
You know, it can kill you. And he's like, right, but in a small dose, it's delicious.
Right.
Which I actually thought that there would be something more with that beyond just giving his jambalaya that kick. Like, I thought that the fact that they were bringing up that it would kill you and they were dealing with somebody who was causing a lot of tension on the show. And I was like, yeah, is this?
That's a good point. That was a good point. Yeah. Maybe they gave him too much of the parsley and they just poisoned him.
Right. But they didn't do
that. See, I guess that's what I'm looking for. I guess what I'm looking for in my Star Trek. I don't know. I don't want too much reality. I can't, like, that's, I go to Star Trek to escape. Right. And I understand that is somewhat against the mission statement of Star Trek, that there is always real life metaphor, real life allegory that we're dealing with, right?
Yes, but that's kind of the point. Like, it's a metaphor, it's an allegory. Like, it's very hard to do an allegory for PTSD and for war experience.
But I was delighted, very delighted to see that we got some sort of payoff to the super juice that Ortegas, no, not Ortegas, the nurse.
Chapel.
Nurse Chapel. Mm-hmm. Chapel and Joseph have, right? In the previous episode where they inject themselves with some sort of thing, green stuff, and they become super people. And I'm glad we didn't need another demonstration of that.
Right.
We knew what that meant, which was a very interesting way to seed that stuff because we were thinking, oh, what episode did we miss? Because they say, we're going to do this again. I guess so. The one thing that was a little bit weird was that we never see or get confirmation that Nurse Chapel actually ever used it.
Right.
I got the impression that they used it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely the impression that I got too. Yep, from Broken Circle.
Right. And so far we have not seen that.
Right.
So either this timeline is going to continue between Chapel and what's his last name? What's the doctor's name?
It's either Mbenga or it's Mbenga, depending on who says it.
Okay. That. We don't know. Like, their relationship is unclear now. I didn't know that they... I mean, I knew that they knew each other, obviously. I didn't know that they had, like, this type of history.
Right.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how far it goes.
Yeah.
Do they have more of a history? Is there sort of this other relationship that they had where there are these super fighters people?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to be a spinoff show. Yeah, Star Trek Super Fighters.
Right, and if they do a certain hand configuration, they join into one giant super fighter.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be animated. It'll be a kid's show.
Right. So the one thing that would have made this like more of a science fiction show for me, and this is a small thing. I feel like there's a point where they have their transporter pad, and in the distance, like the far distance, you can see explosions happening and fighting and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And everything is time synced to it, even though when you're that far away from an explosion, you're going to see it first and then you'll hear it seconds later, right? It would have been so good if we saw that explosion happen, which was miles away.
Right.
Or if we saw it and then we felt it later, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been an interesting detail that they would have done. It's sort of like when they have sound in space. Like you want it to be synchronized with sound. You want to hear that because we've been conditioned
right.
like that way. Mm-hmm. Same thing with explosions. Like when you see an explosion, you want to hear it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it would work.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I just want there to be that nod to like, no, this is what it would have felt like and looked like in that particular scenario.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
Right. Well, and that's kind of a thing that just doesn't happen. So, you know, it would be nice if there was some place somewhere that they did have that kind of delay.
Yeah. And, you know, Firefly, our favorite show, they took a chance and did not have sound whenever there was exterior space stuff.
I know.
Right? Yep.
It was so good.
And they did it. And they got canceled after 14 episodes. So maybe that's why nobody else does it. So not a genuine Star Trek episode in my book. I don't think.
Well, no, there was nothing sci-fi about it.
Not really. Yeah,
there was definitely an ethical and moral dilemma, but Well, and also just speaking to that, like it felt like there was so much focus on the trauma of Joseph and Christine, I think, and Erica, that they didn't really go deep into the question that they continually asked about, do you allow someone the opportunity to atone for their actions or not, basically.
I mean, this is not a plot line foreign to Star Trek until this moment. Mm-hmm. There was actually a Voyager episode where B'Elan is very sick and the doctor has to use the holodeck to bring back the universal specialist in whatever ailment she has. And it turns out that he was responsible for this holocaust of some kind. And B'Elan is very upset that this doctor is treating her because she has such a moral problem with him.
Right.
So this is, you know, they've done this before. Mm-hmm. But even that was a little bit more interesting because it was a holodeck program. It wasn't even a real person.
Right.
But yeah, I would have liked there to be some question mark as to, and I guess there was in my mind as to whether or not the Klingon ambassador was being truthful mm-hmm. and being earnest in what his goals were.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the point of the episode.
Right. Well, and it wasn't really exposed either way, you know, whether or not it was a long con or if he genuinely was repentant.
Right. Yeah.
It can be done. There was an episode of Law and Order. I don't know if you ever saw it, but where there's a professor and a student, and the student is saying that the professor attacked her, and the professor says that he didn't. And there it goes through the entire investigation and through the court, and the episode ends with we find the defendant.
Oh, so we don't even know.
Right. You're presented all of the facts, and then the episode just leaves it, you know, that way.
They should do every episode like that.
Right. I think they tried. I think there was a Law and Order where it was just supposed to be the due process and like finding all the evidence. And it didn't even last a season.
So nobody else liked
right.
it, I yeah. guess. Yeah.
You can go find those 14 episodes.
Right. But anyway. All right. Well, we got through it.
Right.
It's done.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, I've been Paul.
I've been Jonathan.
Shotgun. And this has been The Measure of an Episode.
Hang on. And now we all got through that, but you already knew that.
What is that?
It's leading into our musical episode.
Oh. The Janeway?